helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. Americans believe in liberty, don't we? Well, then why do so many of us try to impose our will on others? From students to sexual activists, we see minority groups trying to force others not only to allow them to live openly, but demanding that they advance their agenda. Activists from climate, green, and abortion agendas who cannot convince others to support their agendas use government at all levels to coerce compliance with their will. Even those who claim to support liberty want to use government to silence their opponents and to force private organizations to spread their articles. Have we the people turned liberty into coercion? How can we expect to live at liberty if we refuse to allow others to do the same? Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I have so much to talk about today. I want to jump right in by starting with a case involving Yeshiva University. None of us want to be judged by our race, sex, or how we live our lives. So what right do we have to impose our views on others, even to the point of controlling their private property? That is the question in a complaint by Yeshiva University. Does the city of New York have the legal authority to make a private university recognize a student group? Can the state order a religious school to violate its core beliefs to accommodate the wishes of a student? If we wish to live at liberty, doesn't that mean we have to allow others to enjoy their own liberty as well, even if we disagree with it? When does protecting one person's right involve infringing on the rights of another? And when is it okay to do so? These are perennial questions in America, ones that have garnered a lot of attention and several Supreme Court cases over the last decade or so. Today, I want to look at another example, one that is still making its way through the courts. The case of Yeshiva University versus YU Pride Alliance questions whether or not New York City's human rights law can be used to override the freedom of religion of a religious school, those who own and operate it, and even the students who attend. The question of a conflict of rights is not only nothing new in America, but based on the questions I've been asked, it's also one of the most confusing topics to most Americans. The questions presented by Yeshiva University in this case all revolve around a single core question. Can the city of New York force a private university to recognize a student group that is antithetical to its religious beliefs? The case started when Yeshiva University decided not to approve a Yeshiva Pride Alliance Club. The university was sued by YU Pride in New York Superior Court, which granted a permanent injunction against Yeshiva University, ordering them to immediately approve the club. Now, the university filed a motion to stay the injunction pending appeal, which was denied by the New York Appellate Court, and attempts to appeal the denial were not even heard by either the New York Appellate Division or the New York Court of Appeals. This led Yeshiva to petition the Supreme Court for a stay of the permanent injunction until the appeal was resolved. This is where I first heard about this case, and this emergency application for a stay is what I will be reviewing. As a deeply religious Jewish university, Yeshiva cannot comply with that order because doing so would violate its sincere religious beliefs about how to form its undergraduate students in Torah values. Here we see the conflict of rights. On the one hand, you have a student who wishes to not only form a Pride Alliance Club, but to have it recognized by the school. On the other, you have a school whose religious beliefs cannot condone the behavior related to the Pride Alliance. Can the school be forced to subject its religious liberty to the desires of a student who wants to attend? By what authority can the city of New York, along with the New York judicial system, force those who own and operate an organization to violate their religious beliefs? There is even more to this case, though, than allowing a club to be created on campus. This extraordinary situation arises from what all parties and the trial court acknowledge was a religious decision not to approve a Yeshiva Pride Club. All parties agree that Yeshiva made this decision in consultation with Roshi Yeshiva, or senior rabbis, and all parties agree that Yeshiva has a deeply religious character as a Jewish university. In fact, plaintiffs admit that they want to force the creation of a Yeshiva Pride Alliance precisely to alter the Yeshiva's religious environment For example, by distributing school-sponsored Pride packages for Passover and upend yeshiva's understanding of Torah with which plaintiffs disagree. This has become a common tactic among the sexual movements. Enter an organization or business you disagree with, then attempt to subvert it by using so-called SOGI, or sexual orientation and gender identity laws. The students that want to create a Pride Alliance Club admit that their purpose is to change the university, and they have accomplices both in New York law and courts. The trial court held that the decision whether to have an official Pride Alliance organization on campus can be made by the government rather than yeshiva itself in consultation with its rabbis. In effect, the New York trial court claimed the government has the power to assume control over a private religious university. Where did the court find such a power? Relying on the New York City human rights law, the court concluded that the government can force yeshiva to recognize an official Pride Alliance Club because yeshiva purportedly offers too many secular degrees to qualify for the law's express exemption for religious organizations. Now, many of you are probably thinking of an argument based on the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. This was the argument brought by yeshiva to the Supreme Court, but there's a problem with this argument. Congress did not make this law. Remember, the First Amendment reads, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof." Now, that fact is very important. See, while the courts routinely incorporate the First Amendment against the states under the 14th Amendment's Privileges and Immunities Clause, which reads, "No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States." However, the First Amendment still says, "Congress shall make no law." Now, what the trial court has done is effectively establish the standards for a religion to be recognized, at least when it comes to their schools. The trial court said the Yeshiva University is a religious school, just not religious enough to be treated as a religious organization. Worse, the court ignored Yeshiva's First Amendment church autonomy arguments entirely and cursorily rejected its free exercise argument. In essence, the court found that Yeshiva is not a religious entity and has no right to control how its religious beliefs and values are interpreted or applied on its campuses. Now, the term church autonomy refers to a Supreme Court precedent that supports the independence of religious institutions. Again, since Congress did not pass New York City's human rights law, this is not a First Amendment issue. This law and the actions of the trial court do violate the Constitution of the state of New York, however. The free exercise and enjoyment of religious profession and worship without discrimination or preference shall forever be allowed in this state to all humankind. Now, telling the university that they must allow the formation of an organization within their school whose purpose is to fundamentally change the religious nature of the school certainly does infringe on the free exercise and enjoyment of religious profession and worship. Now, by placing the rights of the students who wish to form a club as superior to those who own and operate the university, the court has clearly discriminated against the school because of its religious nature. Furthermore, by claiming that the owners of the school have no right to control its own beliefs and values, the court has denied the owners both their liberty and property they have in the school. This is a violation of the Due Process Clause of both the 5th and 14th Amendments to the Constitution of the United States. The 5th Amendment reads, "No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law." And the 14th Amendment reads, "Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law." Although not part of the university's arguments, some of you may be thinking about an Establishment Clause violation. Now, as noted before, the trial court has established a standard for what makes a school religious enough for recognition. This appears to be a clear case of establishing a religion. The Constitution of the state of New York, like the constitutions of many of our states, does not prohibit the state from establishing a religion. And since only Congress is prohibited from establishing a religion, the argument there doesn't apply here. Yet because of the permanent injunction below, yeshiva and its president are now being ordered to violate their religious beliefs or face contempt. That ruling is an unprecedented intrusion into yeshiva's religious beliefs and religious formation of its students in the Jewish faith. It is also an indisputably clear violation of yeshiva's First Amendment rights. While I've already shown that the First Amendment claim is flawed, Well, federal courts have frequently ignored the language of the Constitution in an attempt to protect religious freedom. What we have here is a clear violation of freedom of religion, both of the operators of the university and of the students who attend specifically for its religious culture and instruction. The permanent injunction is a grave injustice to the school and its students, which is why, failing in the New York State courts, the university appealed for protection from the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, when a petition like this comes to the Supreme Court, it is directed to one of the justices. The justice may deal with the petition themselves or bring the matter up to the court as a whole. Now, you may have noticed that there are 9 justices on the Supreme Court and 9 circuits in the Court of Appeals. Each justice has a circuit that they are accountable for. They're called circuit courts because justices used to ride a circuit every year. Now, the Second Circuit is overseen by Justice Sonia Sotomayor. Her response was brief, but strong. Upon consideration of the application of counsel for the applicants and the response and reply filed thereto, it is ordered that the injunction of the New York Trial Court case number 15010-2021 is hereby stayed pending further order of the undersigned or of the court. This means that the courts of the state of New York are prohibited from enforcing their injunction until further notice from the Supreme Court. Before I conclude, I want to take some time and deal with the question of conflicting rights. See, here we have the religious freedom of the school and the assembly of those who wish to have the club. There are many other examples I'm asked about: mandates to enter buildings, restrictions on carrying firearms, even the ability to express oneself. It all comes down to an understanding of rights. Now, I have an entire lecture on what is a right that I can summarize in 2 simple sentences. The legitimate exercise of a right cannot infringe on the rights of another. Therefore, for a right to be legitimate, you must be able to exercise it without infringing on the rights of another. Now, how does this apply in this case? The operators and students of Yeshiva University have several rights in play here. We focus on the free exercise of religion, but they also have the right to be at liberty to decide where they will attend school, the property they have in that school, and even the right to peaceably assemble with like-minded people. Now, the students that wish to form a pride club also have a right to be at liberty in where they go to school and to peaceably assemble. In this conflict between 2 sets of rights, who should win? The question comes down to who is attempting to impose their will upon the other. Now, some will argue that Yeshiva University is attempting to impose their religious viewpoint on the students who want to change it. Remember, though, the school did not force the students to attend. Neither did they hide their religious standards to trick the students when they were deciding where to go to school. So while the school does have its religious viewpoints, they are not attempting to force it on anyone. Rather, they are trying to defend it from attempts to change it. Now let's look at this from the pride standpoint. Nothing I'm aware of is stopping these students from gathering together in a pride club. Instead, what they want is recognition by the school. So the right to peaceably assemble is not being infringed. As I've already mentioned, the students are not forced to attend Yeshiva University, neither were they deceived about the religious environment it maintains. So their liberty has not been infringed. According to court records, these students wish to force the creation of this club specifically to alter the religious environment of the university. In other words, these students are attempting to illegitimately use their rights to infringe on the rights of the operators and other students of this school. Lastly, if we look at the city of New York and the courts of the state of New York, both are attempting to impose their will on the university. While the state does have an interest in preventing discrimination, that is not what is happening here. From the complaint, it is undisputed that Yeshiva has recently emphasized continued enforcement of its policies prohibiting any form of harassment or discrimination, updated its diversity, inclusion, and sensitivity training to better reflect concerns of LGBTQ students, ensured that there are staff in its counseling center with specific LGBTQ+ experience, appointed a point person to oversee a warm line that will be available for anyone to report any concerns pertaining to non-inclusive behavior, and continued to create a space for students, faculty, and Rosh Yeshiva to continue this conversation. Yeshiva University has continued to protect all communities, including the LGBTQ community, from harassment or discrimination. What the city and courts of New York are attempting to do is harass a religious organization into endorsing a lifestyle that is opposed to their beliefs and discriminating against university because, in the eyes of the court, it is not religious enough. Based on these three viewpoints, who is attempting to impose their will on whom? While the stay from the Supreme Court is good news, it doesn't mean that Yeshiva University is out of the woods. My guess is there will be plenty of opinions, appeals, and legal maneuvering before this case is finally decided. As Thomas Jefferson said, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. I can only hope that Yeshiva University will remain vigilant and the freedom-loving people of America will stand with them in their struggle. Now, this story isn't quite over, but I do have to take a break. Before I do that, I want to remind you to check out HealthyCell.com. They are a leading innovator in supplements for body health at the cellular level. One of the products I really love, in fact, my wife and daughter use it regularly, is a product called REM Sleep. It helps them fall asleep, stay asleep, and sleep better so they can wake up refreshed. As an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order of REM Sleep or any HealthyCell products. Just use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So again, go to HealthyCell.com, try REM Sleep or any of their great products, use a code OUTLOUD at checkout, and they will give you 25% off your first order. And hang on, I'll be right back after this break with the rest of this story about Yeshiva University.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. I'm glad you're here with us today. Now, as I said, the story with Yeshiva University is not over. It seems the entire Supreme Court reviewed Sotomayor's stay and came to a different conclusion. In fact, they reversed Justice Sotomayor's stay. The reasons for this reversal are stated by the court as the application is denied because it appears the applicants have at least two further avenues for expedited or interim state court relief. First, applicants may ask the New York court to expedite consideration of the merits of their appeal. Applicants do not assert, nor does the appellate division docket reveal, that they have ever requested such relief. Second, appellants may file with the appellate court a corrected motion for permission to appeal that court's denial of a stay to the New York Court of Appeals, as appellant division clerk's office directed appellants to do on August 25. Applicants may also ask the appellate division to expedite consideration of that motion. I must admit that my first reaction was disappointment in the court, a feeling with which I am well familiar. Reading the opinion, though, the disappointment has lessened somewhat. It appears the court did not consider the merits of the application for stay, but rather decided the case was not ripe for the high court. The court noted that there are at least two further actions Yeshiva University can take for relief in the state court system. I generally agree that such cases are better served in state courts rather than in federal. However, I'm still unsettled. Having seen in this case the general disdain the New York state courts have shown Yeshiva University's petition, I do not expect further appeals to the same court that have summarily rejected even considering previous petitions to fare any better than their predecessors. Now, Justice Alito dissented from this decision and was joined by Justices Thomas, Gorsuch, and Barrett. Are you interested in the fact that Justice Sotomayor, who originally issued the stay, joined with the majority in rescinding it? In his dissent, Justice Alito stated, "The First Amendment guarantees the right to the free exercise of religion, and if that provision means anything, it prohibits a state from enforcing its own preferred interpretation of Holy Scripture. Yet that is exactly what New York State has done in this case, and it is disappointing that a majority of this court refuses to provide relief." While I agree that the state is establishing religious standards, I would not put it quite that way. What the state of New York has done through its courts is determine whether or not a religious school is religious enough for the protection of its rights. By ordering the school to recognize a student group whose purpose, as shown in the previous court proceedings, is to fundamentally change Yeshiva into a university that complies with the YU Pride Alliance's interpretation of Torah, in effect, the state of New York has ordered the hens to bring the fox into the henhouse. Now the Supreme Court has decided to force the hens to wait while they petition the wolf for protection. If anyone at Yeshiva University or involved in this case should hear these words, I can only offer you my support and hope it gives you some comfort, and possibly an argument to be used to support your position. Though I know these words cost me nothing, the fight you are in may cost you everything. I wish to remind you of the words of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, or as they're better known, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the golden image which you have set up." So I know there was a lot there. That was a very long article that I wrote, but there's so much information that's so important, and it all revolves around the imposition of will. Does the group that wants to form YU Pride Alliance, do they have the right to impose their will on a private university, to force them to change their interpretation of their holy scriptures to meet their the Pride's agenda? That's the fundamental question, and it's one that the state of New York got amazingly wrong. But it's not alone. And again, I'm kind of disappointed in the Supreme Court, not because I so much disagree that there may be other things at the state level that Yeshiva University can lean towards, but the fact that they didn't protect a school that is obviously under political attack doesn't, you know, it kind of bothers me. So that's why I said I'm still a little about the decision to not put a stay on the lower court's order. But again, this is nothing new. I've been watching for years as different groups, in fact, decades at this point, have used a protected status that in many cases the government and the courts have simply made up in order to force others to abandon their opinions, abandon their beliefs, and not only acknowledge, but in many cases promote another agenda. Remember, the purpose, one of the purposes that YU Pride Alliance has stated is they wish to force the school to recognize them so that they can change the school's understanding of Torah, the part of the Hebrew scriptures. But this is, again, not alone. There's a push right now. Senator Schumer, I believe, has brought to the floor a bill Senator Sheldon Whitehouse that basically wants to force groups to disclose any donors who contribute more than $10,000 to a cause within a two-year cycle if that group conducts advocacy. In other words, if they mention a candidate. Now, again, this is one of those where I'm a little bit torn. On the one hand, I like the idea of transparency, of groups that are politically active disclosing donors so that the people know before that you know where this information is coming from. The problem is this information isn't disclosed to the people. It's disclosed to the government. So I find it interesting. Two things. One is this general idea of that you have a right to know who is donating to a group that is putting out a media. And part of that I look at and say, well, yeah, I kind of want to know, but isn't it up to me to find out? And the other part of it is right now that donation is set for $10,000. What's to prevent it going to down to $10? In other words, we have seen this done before to quote unquote dox. Primarily, it's used against conservative groups. So if you donated money to a group that is not in favor, especially with the current Democratic Party, that information, your private personal information, is made public so that, all the activists can go after you. There's also one other little interesting one. They also want to include any group that would advocate for or against particular federal judicial nominees. Again, is this an attempt to inform the voting public? It seems more like an attempt to suppress the speech and publishing of people who disagree with the current political party, or at least the one that has the most power at the moment, which today is the Democratic Party. But we also see these banned books. It's the time of year. Book banning, book burning, acting as if, you know, libraries and schools are taking out hundreds and thousands of books and burning them in the street, which primarily is not the case. But I also find it very interesting because book banning is actually being used to suppress freedom of speech of others. Now, here's my position. If it's a public library, information should be publicly available. The question is, when you're dealing with a school library or even any public library, is there a way to protect children from information that may be harmful for them or that their parents believe is inappropriate? But that doesn't seem to be the focus of these book banning warnings and announcements. Now, we have to understand, freedom of the press means you can publish any book you want. Right, with being most states have a caveat saying that you are responsible for any damage or any criminality in what you say, but for the most part, you can be published. It doesn't guarantee you an audience, which is generally what's going on here. For example, again, focusing on school public libraries, a school district in Utah removed 52 books from the school library, and then they changed course due to a public outcry. In Virginia, the school board ordered the removal of certain books with LGBTQ themes and called for an audit of the school library holdings to eliminate what one member called bad, evil-related material. Now, granted, as I said, these are not limited to local schools. The state of Oklahoma, the legislature, introduced a bill that would prohibit school libraries from holding on to certain books. And these are generally the books that are being banned from school libraries are sexually explicit or physically dangerous to the children. By that, I mean they tend to groom children to a certain lifestyle. Now, again, I make a distinction between a public school library and a generally open to the public library with the idea of, do parents in a school have the legal authority to control what their minor children have access to, right? We're dealing with minors. It's an important point, and it's something I want to reinforce. I show that as distinct from a general public library where that books may be available, but they may be in certain in sections not focused at children. I mean, trust me, I am disgusted by the amount of what I would refer to as perverted, overly sexualized, and indoctrination-focused material that is targeted at young children. And I'm not talking teenagers. I'm talking first and second graders. Again, if a parent wants their child to be exposed to that, I'm not saying they shouldn't be allowed to. But the vast majority of parents I know want to protect their children from such information. It's one of the, you know, it's not an easy defined line between what should be allowed and what shouldn't be allowed, and where freedom of the press, or as most people refer to freedom of speech, which is technically freedom of the press, where the distinction between the ability to publish and the requirement to have a specific audience. The freedom of press is your freedom to publish. It doesn't mean you have a right to a specific audience. And when you're dealing with public entities like public libraries, it is the public as a whole that should be making the distinction as to what is readily available and what is not. And here another example. Now, I don't know about you, I have been a Dilbert fan for decades. I spent the better part of 30 years in corporate America, where I saw way too much truth in the humor that Dilbert and his creator, Scott Adams, used. As G.K. Chesterton once said, humor can get in under the door while seriousness is still fumbling at the handle. And I laugh out loud. I actually used to use Dilbert material to break the ice in certain situations. But it appears, well, there are some people that don't like what the type of content Dilbert has been putting out, or Mr. Adams has been putting out in his Dilbert comic. You see, there have been a series of comics that, well, let's just say they are poking fun at corporate wokeness. And apparently Mr. Adams has been informed by newspapers owned by Lee Enterprises, well, that his comic has been pulled by dozens of publications. See, apparently it's okay to make fun of Christians, God, church, pro-life people, but don't go after the religion of wokeness. And think about that. The people that say they want to be free to do certain things are unwilling to allow people to disagree with them. Now listen, if you agree with wokeness, if you support wokeness, you don't have to read Dilbert's comics. There are a lot of comics I don't look at, I don't read. But to have a corporate, and again, these newspapers, these privately owned newspapers, are well within their rights to determine what content will be in their pages. I don't see a legal issue with this. But it should tell you a lot about these papers. See, if these papers are willing to censor a comic because they don't like what it says, what else are they censoring because they don't like what it says? So I believe the cure to bad speech is not restriction of speech, but more speech. And I find it interesting that the progressive Marxists that seem to control so much of the academic and corporate America, these humorless, overbearing, and basically hypocritical group, well, they don't want you to see anything that disagrees with their political agenda. Now, in that scenario, do you trust what they say? Find out if you read these newspapers, ask yourself a question. Do you trust what they're censoring? I don't. But then again, about the only newspaper I read is my local newspaper. There are a few paper I get articles from as I go about my research for this program. But the only one I subscribe to is my local hometown paper so I can find out what's going on in my neighborhood. And as further proof that this wokeness is just plain detrimental to society as a whole, I give to you the Confederate Memorial at Arlington National Cemetery. See, the cornerstone was laid back in November of 1912. It was involved William Jennings Bryan, a three-time Democratic candidate for president. Also, James Tanner, a former Union corporal. And the monument was intended to be symbolic of the spirit of reconciliation. Well, apparently reconciliation is not compatible with the current left's progressive agenda to wipe out anything they disagree with. You see, the naming commission that has been trying to change the name of several military posts in the South, such as Fort Hood and Fort Bragg, which are named, again, in the spirit of reconciliation, well, they've recommended that this memorial, this monument, be removed. Isn't it interesting that reconciliation is not a progressive agenda? They want everything they disagree with destroyed. And with that, every lesson that we've learned from that history, I'm really not surprised. Because if the progressives actually paid any attention to history, they would see the despotic totalitarian future they're trying to lay the foundation for themselves. Now listen, I got to take another break, but before I do, I want to remind you that this is not the only voice on America Out Loud. There are plenty of great content creators, and you can find their articles, their videos, their podcasts, all of them you can find on AmericaOutLoud.com. Now, don't just find them, share them. You see, we combat censorship by providing more data, by providing more speech, more articles in different pathways. So if you have friends that are losing their Dilbert or losing their other content because of censorship, provide it to them another way. That's how we help secure the blessings of liberty in this great nation.
You already know Genesis plus HOCL is your best defense against viruses. But did you also know it's the most powerful weapon for eliminating airborne mold too? Customers are raving about the Genesis Fogger's ability to tackle mold problems and the bad smells that go with them. And we all know mold is a hazard to your health. There's no airborne invader that Genesis can't handle. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Whoa, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Man, I have a huge stack of material related to this idea of imposing our will on others. Let's get right into it. California has recently announced a sweeping package of legislation that Governor Newsom refers to as the most aggressive climate change measures to accelerate the state's transition to non-conventional energy resources. Now, I want you to think about this. For whether you are pro quote-unquote green energy or not, I say quote-unquote because there's not a lot of green in the green bills, but I have a question for you. You're basically telling the world, you don't have the argument to convince people to adopt your agenda, so you're going to force it on them by law. That's what I see here, right? It's not that, you know, if this green agenda, if these non-conventional energy sources were so wonderful, you'd have to beat customers off with a stick. But they're not. Therefore, they must be imposed by the will of your betters in government. Does that sound like freedom or liberty? See, it doesn't sound like liberty to me. It sounds like, it sounds like despotism, coercion. And the fact that the citizens of California have voted in to have their will imposed on others, or an agenda they apparently support, says a lot more about the citizens of California than they probably want to be heard. That they are themselves petty tyrants wishing to impose their will on others. And if that's the way they want to live, if they want to suffer the consequences, be my guest. But you cannot legally enforce the rest of the states to pay for your agenda or to bail you out when your economy collapses because you've got no energy, because things are blacking out, because you ignored logic and reason and science and promoted a hoax to the destruction of your own state. I hope you enjoy it. Let's take a look at our favorite attack dog recently, the FBI. Now, I've already talked about the pro-life father who was arrested by a raid in his home by the FBI. It's interesting, reports differ as to whether or not SWAT was used, but apparently there's like at least two dozen agents showed up to arrest a pro-life activist for defending his son from an intimidating pro-abortion activist. Again, imposing an agenda. See, if we had a justice system that was blind, it would look at this and say, what we have is a shoving match, and both were involved, both should be looked at, but we don't. See, because one is currently not favored by the government of their state, well, they get raided by the FBI. And again, why the FBI? Shoving in an abortion clinic is not a federal crime, at least not legally, because it's not pursuant to the Constitution. This is a state or local issue, but we have the federal government getting involved. Why? Because it was a pro-life actor, and they're not allowed to have a pro-life agenda. You're not allowed to defend a pro-life agenda. Same thing with the parents that were upset with what their schools were teaching their children, that vented at school board meetings for their frustration with the sexualization and racial agenda being promoted in these schools. And then what happened? Well, the FBI was sicked on them. And in fact, we have reports that the FBI is tagging them as potential domestic extremists, violent domestic extremists. Well, there have been several whistleblowers from the FBI coming out saying nobody that they know signed up to investigate parents for merely venting at school board meetings. Another one that's pointing out the Bureau is violating their own policies in their January 6th investigation in an attempt to make the quote-unquote insurrection, the domestic violent extremists, to be much larger than they actually are. And again, those are just two where we have the federal government saying, if you don't agree with our agenda, we will sic our attack dogs on you. The Federal Bureau of Intimidation will now show up at your door. They will arrest you for the minorest of state and local offenses. They will blow an investigation well out of proportion in order to silence and intimidate those who disagree with them. And of course, it's not just the FBI. There's an army doctor who says he's being persecuted for giving religious exemptions, for giving exemptions to the COVID-19 non-vaccine. I know they call it a vaccine. It's not legally a vaccine. But he's been giving medical exemptions, and he claims he's being persecuted for it. This Major Samuel Sigaloff, I believe is his name, he was the director of the Raymond W. Bliss Army Health Center at Fort Huck, Halacha, Arizona. Sorry, I know I mispronounced that. But what's interesting, he's been ordered to stop seeing patients. He's been assigned menial duties. He's even been given relief for cause of office evaluation reports, all risking his license and his practice as a medical professional. Why? Well, he claims it's retribution for actually giving medical waivers for those who don't want to take, who don't want to be human guinea pigs in the military. Here we go again, right? We have the Army, you're not following the agenda. Now, again, is the doctor well within his rights? As I understand the story, yes, he is. But you see, it doesn't promote the totalitarian agenda of the current administration. Therefore, all those who oppose them must be punished. Not following the law, not even following the Constitution. We're just going to punish him because the administration doesn't like it. Even though all the rules for this are set by Congress, not by the administration. And speaking of the administration, I love this one. I see this all the time. The White House now wants the Atlanta Braves to change their nickname. I guess they don't like the idea that the Braves refers to Indian Warriors. See, a few days ago, a couple weeks ago, actually, Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary, said it was time for Major League Baseball to change the Braves' name on account it was insensitive to use an element of Indian culture as a team name. Tell me, how many Native Americans have complained about the name of the Braves? Just how many? Why is it an administration run by a white man, an old white man, is so worried that it's insulting to Indians? Have they complained? I mean, isn't this actually a promotion of their culture? To understand the brave warriors, even the tomahawk chop, to show that they're honored for their bravery and for their skill? No, they don't like it. The White House doesn't like it. So they want to impose their will, not only on the owners of the Braves, but even on the people that follow them. See, if the owners have no problem with it, and remember, the Atlanta Braves, they are owned by an individual or private corporation. See, if they have no problem with it, then we're talking about the White House once again attempting to deprive a business or an individual of control of their property without any due process and without any even logical, rational reason to do so, other than some people, my guess would be mostly, white Americans, white liberal progressive communists don't like it, but they want to impose their will on others. Now, another way to impose your will is to use simply ridiculous hyperbolic arguments to pretend that something is really worse than it is. For example, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who I contend is a perfect example of why you should keep your mouth shut and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and prove it, was tweeting the other day, which she said, solidarity with the courageous woman and allies in Iran protesting for their freedom. Mahsa Amini was senselessly murdered by the same patriarchal and autocratic forces repressing women the world over. The right to choose belongs to us all, from hijabs to reproductive care. Now, I just want you to think about that for a second. Ms. Ocasio-Cortez claimed that protecting the life in the womb is equivalent to taking a life outside the womb. That's what I say. These people are bloodthirsty. And she compares a murder of a human being with the saving of a life of a human being. I mean, by her logic, I can't call it logic. It is irrational. But you see, it's the emotional reaction. If people can emote, see how terrible it is. This woman was, this protester in Iran was killed. Therefore, you know, it's just as bad as you being told that there is no nationwide right to kill the baby in the womb. And again, you're still dealing with states. You can still travel to a state where that can happen. And that's a whole other kettle of fish. But you see, you're not allowed to oppose Ms. Ocasio-Cortez's opinion. Otherwise, you're a religious fundamentalist extremist like those who are in charge of Iran. That's just another attempt to shut down the other side. While we're at it, let's talk about Sunny Hostin. She's a co-host on The View, and they were discussing, well, ranting actually, about the Florida stunt sending illegal aliens to Martha's Vineyard, making them, actually suffer some of the consequences, a small percentage of the consequences for their decisions. In that discussion, she said, well, that's what's so interesting to me, that there are so many Latinos that vote Republican because they vote against their own self-interest. Again, I want you to think about that. Think about the arrogance of saying, I know what's best for you, do what I say, or you're voting against your own self-interest. Now, she may believe that, and she's more than willing to, but she's telling all Hispanics all Latinos, that they must be exactly alike, go in complete lockstep, and follow the Democratic Party, because she says, if you really are interested in these types of issues, then you're a Democrat. Really? The idea, how many legal immigrants has she surveyed to find out what they think about illegal immigration? How many Latinos has she interviewed in order to question what they think about illegal immigration, illegal aliens? And while we're at it, has she asked the people who were sent to Martha's Vineyard? Because as I understand it, all of them agreed to go. None was forced to go. They agreed to go. And she seems to be so worried about her Florida taxpayer money being used for that, ignoring the millions, if not billions of dollars being spent by the federal government to take these people and distribute the illegal aliens and transport them all over the country. See, it's attempt. Let me shut down the debate by making it seem so evil. I look at it and go, it just to me shows that you're a petty tyrant that believe you have the legal authority to tell other people how they should live and how they should vote. And I agree there are a lot of people that I think are voting against their self-interest, but that's their choice. She doesn't believe in choice. She only believes in choice, apparently, probably if it regards death, but I'm not sure about that. And then one more quick one before I run out of time. You know, I've talked before about this, but I need to get away from PayPal. But I find it interesting that you have organizations like PayPal, Venmo, and others that that ban what they call anti-groomer charities. In other words, charities that look at adults that are attempting to groom a child into a certain lifestyle, or groom even other people into another lifestyle, not simply to promote it, but to prepare them for it. They're more than they can't have that. You're not allowed to dispute with those who say, if you for 30 seconds think you're another gender, well, then you are. You're not allowed to note that. All of the questions about conversion therapy and others always go one way. But they're more than happy to support pedophilia. Yeah, if you are a pedophilia support group, if you promote the idea of having sex with children, they're supporting that. This is just another attempt to promote one agenda over another. Now, the difference with, say, a Sunny Hostra or PayPal and Venmo is they are proposing their opinions. They aren't forcing other people to comply. And I'm okay with that. I don't think Sunny should be silenced. I don't think PayPal or Venmo should be forced to support organizations they disagree with. But when you take someone like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she's allowed to have her opinion as long as she doesn't try to use that opinion in law, as long as she doesn't try to use her position to deprive people that disagree with her from their rights. And that's the point I think I want to drive home. We all want to impose our will on others. It takes an act of consciousness and heart to say, I disagree with you. I vehemently disagree with you. But I'll defend to the death your right to say it. Sadly, that idea seems to be lost in America. See, it seems to me that liberty has become one-sided. You're willing, you want to exercise your liberty. You want to be free to do things the way you want, but you are willing to deny others the very same right. I disagree with Ms. Hostra. I disagree with PayPal and Venmo. I even disagree with Ms. Ocasio-Cortez. I don't deny them the right to express their opinion, though. I don't think they should be censored for that information. Sadly, there are plenty of people who think exactly the opposite, that think if you disagree, then you don't deserve to be heard. That is how tyranny grows. That's how oppression grows. That is how society stagnates, deteriorates, and eventually destroys itself. If you disagree with these people, say so. Do not allow them to intimidate you into silence, because that, as I believe it was William Pitt the Younger said, is the creed of slaves. Before I go, I want to remind you to share the news. People can listen to the Constitution Study 4 p.m. Eastern Time every weekday on AmericaOutLoud.com, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. They can also find the podcast by looking at their favorite podcast app. Just search for the Constitution Study. You can find all the links, all the apps, all the tools right there at the homepage of AmericaOutLoud.com. And by sharing them, by helping other people find other points of view, you do your part to help share the blessings of liberty in this great nation from sea to shining sea.